WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. Adolescence has always been hard, but it's been getting harder. My guest, Mary Pfeiffer, has reached that conclusion after working with junior high school age girls with eating disorders, girls who mutilate themselves, girls who are pregnant, and girls who have virtually stopped communicating with their parents. We're not talking about problems that are only found in big cities. Pfeiffer is a clinical psychologist with a private practice in Lincoln, Nebraska. She also teaches at the University of Nebraska and Nebraska Wesleyan University. She shares some of her alarming observations in her new book, Reviving Ophelia, Saving the Selves of Adolescent Girls. She told me what she sees happening to girls once they reach adolescence.
Well, I think girls go from being very whole, zesty, complete, curious, lively human beings at 8, 9, and 10 to being diminished, truncated versions of themselves by time they're 12 or 13. There's a couple markers at that time that are very important to girls. One is when they start puberty and their physical development into womanhood. And the other is when they start junior high. Usually between about 10 and 13, those things happen to girls. And when those things happen, they stop being as authentic and whole and become quieter, more passive, less curious, and so on.
You say with a lot of adolescent girls, their voices go underground, their speech becomes more tentative, mm-hmm. less mm-hmm. articulate. You see that happen a lot?
Absolutely. One teacher put it this way. She said, at 11 years old, girls that are ignored shout louder. At 13, if they're ignored, they're silenced.
So what else do you see besides this insecurity? You see a lot of eating disorders?
Well, I wrote the book because what's happened to me in the last few years is my office has just been filled with junior high girls in trouble. They have a variety of complaints. Some of them are depressed. In our community, 40% of all girls by the time they're age 15 have considered suicide. So I see a lot of girls that are depressed and suicidal, lots of girls who are running away from home, who are refusing to go to school, girls with eating disorders, and increasingly girls who are cutting and burning themselves as a way to cope with stress. What happened is, as I saw all these girls, many of whom come from very good homes, homes where there are two parents, no one's abusing chemicals or abusing the daughter, I really started to think, what's going on with girls that they're under this much stress?
A lot of adolescents start to be very embarrassed by their parents, and this is a kind of old tradition in America.
That's for sure. I can speak from experience on that.
Yeah, and the parent is supposed to walk like 10 paces behind the kid at the mm-hmm, shopping mall mm-hmm. so that nobody knows they're related.
Absolutely.
They can't talk in public on the train or whatever.
Absolutely.
Right? So is it often the parent who brings in the daughter for therapy to you?
I see a lot of mother-daughter pairs that are really fighting at this age, and the mothers are so troubled by it and absolutely baffled by it because they will have had wonderful, loving relationships with their daughters. This will seem to just come up almost overnight. And I think several things are going on there. I think one thing is, in this culture, we define adulthood as turning away from parents. And one of the things girls almost have to do to be accepted by peers and see themselves as moving away from home and into adulthood is reject their parents. So part of this is a culturally induced distancing from parents. The other thing I think that's going on is girls at this age see adulthood as engaging in many self-destructive behaviors, such as smoking, drinking, drug use, dressing seductively, sexual activity. Obviously, their mothers don't see these as good things for them. And so there's a lot of tension around rules, limits, what behavior is and isn't appropriate, with the mothers really trying to keep their daughters healthy and safe, and the daughters fighting hard for the right to be able to, in some cases, self-destruct.
What are some of the issues that come up around sexuality, whether to have sex or not,
yeah,
when you see people in your practice?
Well, girls at this point in time have a very difficult time dealing with sexuality. I mean, first of all, they have three very complicated issues to deal with. They have the issue of coming to terms with their own sexuality, which has always been a issue for women this age. They also have the problem of defining sexual relationships in a pluralistic society. And finally, they have the difficulty of not being sexual assaulted. You know, there's statistics now that suggest about 30% of all young women are sexually assaulted. So they have to figure out some way to be sexual and to be safe.
Do you see a lot of girls who are pregnant?
I see girls who are pregnant. I see girls with sexually transmitted diseases. I see many girls who are promiscuous. And by the way, these sexual issues don't get sorted out very quickly. I also teach at colleges in Lincoln, and oftentimes girls in college are really about as mixed up as junior high girls. One college student told me one time, she was talking about sex on campus, and she said, you know, a lot of us just don't know what to do, so on Saturday nights we get drunk and do it. I mean, there's a lot of confusion in our young people around sexuality right now.
Do you find that a lot of girls have no idea how to say no? I guess what I'm wondering is, if when you talk as openly as you can with girls about sex, do you find that they enjoy it at a very young age and that they really want to do it, or do you find that it's more kind of pressure and wanting to be
liked?
I
don't find that at all. In fact, I would say this, that the healthiest girls are the ones that tend to avoid sexual relationships until relatively late. The girls that are sexually active in junior high, almost all of them are eager to please, desperate to be liked, very desperate to be told they're beautiful and to prove to themselves that boys like them. The other thing is they tend to be fairly unconscious of what they're doing. I mean, I usually start out by saying to a girl that's sexually active, do you have any criteria for when you have sex? I mean, how do you make this decision? At which point, girls in junior high look very embarrassed and oftentimes will giggle or go, well, gee, I don't know. And basically what turns out to be the case a lot of times is they have sex if someone asks them to have sex. So one of the things I try to do with girls is say, let's you and I come up with a list of the things that need to happen before you would be sexually involved with a boy. And that's a major step when a girl starts having a few criteria and starts thinking before she has sex. Another thing, of course, many girls need is just assertiveness training. They need to practice with me. We'll role play and we'll have a lot of fun with this, my being a boy and proposing that they have sex and teaching the girl how to say no and how to counter some of the various ploys that a boy might use to encourage the girl to have sex.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Mary Pfeiffer. She's a clinical psychologist based in Lincoln, Nebraska. She's the author of the new book, Reviving Ophelia, Saving the Selves of Adolescent Girls. We'll be right back. This is Fresh Air. Mary Pfeiffer is my guest. She's a clinical psychologist in Nebraska who works with girls of junior high school age primarily. She's the author of a new book about adolescent girls called Reviving Ophelia. You've been seeing a lot of self-mutilation in the last few years. What are you seeing?
Well, first of all, I had never seen a girl who cut or burned herself until about the last 5 years. And now what I see is basically girls who have been pretty healthy, but their parents often are bringing them in. Occasionally they come in through an emergency room because they're using razor blades or knives to cut themselves, usually on their arms, breasts, and stomachs. Or they're burning themselves with cigarettes or candles. And when I talk to these girls, generally they all say the same thing, which is they get extraordinarily stressed. They don't know what to do. They feel totally overwhelmed. And so the way they deal with that overwhelmness is hurt themselves physically. And they almost always use the same line, which is, I would rather hurt on the outside than on the inside.
It's fascinating to me that it's getting expressed through self-mutilation, though.
Yeah. Well, it's really
very disturbing.
Sad. It's very interesting, isn't it? How, you know, I think about 10 years ago is when eating disorders really happened in my part of the world, at least. And all of a sudden, women were calling and saying, I don't even understand what's going on, but I'm vomiting all the time. I don't think self-mutilation is going to be as epidemic as eating disorders. I do believe it's a statement about the learning curve just being too steep for girls and adolescents right now.
There's a history in our culture of daughters being afraid that they're going to become like their mothers.
Yes.
You see a lot of that. What are the specific fears now?
Well, I think it's always been an insult to women to say, you'll just be like your mother. And I think that's a very sad thing in Western culture. I also think that in the past, women haven't had a great deal of power. And so girls haven't wanted to identify with a population group that was most clearly not in power.
Okay, but now we're seeing a lot of daughters of women who have power. They're mm-hmm, professionals. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They're mothers and professionals.
Yeah.
So when a daughter of a mother who has power now and who has kind of achieved professionally and has a personal life as well, when that daughter is afraid of becoming like her mother, what is she afraid of becoming?
What's happening, I think, when that occurs, and that occurs all the time, is girls have mothers who are strong and assertive, who are encouraging them to be that way. But then those girls end up in the very mean halls of junior high, and they're assertive and they get called bitches, or they talk loud and boys put them down, or they feel good about their violin playing, and then instead of people commenting on their violin playing, people comment on their chest size. And all of those experiences confuse girls. And first of all, they realize that the things that their mothers have told them are important aren't particularly important to their peers. And I think in some ways they may even feel a sense of betrayal of, why didn't you, my parents, warn me that this was what junior high would be like? The other thing they feel, of course, and they're right about this, is that their parents do not understand the world that they're living in. And I think that makes girls angry at their mothers. Girls actually, I think, have deep loving feelings toward their mothers all through this period. And they have a belief that sometimes gets them in trouble. For example, I think girls think oftentimes that their mothers have the power to protect them. And so when they're hurt, and even by hurt I mean sexually assaulted, oftentimes they're angry at their mothers. They have this sense that their mothers should have done something to make this not happen. And I think that comes from a very deep-seated cultural belief that women are somehow responsible for the well-being of everyone in their family. And if family members aren't happy, somehow it's the mother's fault.
So what advice do you give feminist mothers?
Well, I think one thing that's very important to keep in mind is girls' needs at this time. The world's changed a great deal, but girls' needs haven't changed very much. They need physical safety, and I encourage all girls to take self-defense. They need psychological safety, which means a home where they can be valued for who they truly are. Girls need help with stress management. They need quiet places and quiet times. They need challenges. They need meaningful work. And they need a sense of purpose. And I think parents can help with some of those things. What parents really can't help with, I think, in junior high is their daughter's self-esteem. Because self-esteem in junior high tends to come from peer evaluations. And mothers really can't do much about that.
You write that it's your goal when you're working with a young girl to teach her that the most important question isn't what other people think of her, mm-hmm. but who is she?
Right, absolutely.
Now, how do you help a girl find that out?
Well, I recommend a variety of things to girls. One is that they find a quiet place and spend a little time every day centering. And that is looking within themselves and listening to their own heart when it comes to making decisions about what they want to do that day and so on. I also recommend that girls journal because that's a place where their thoughts really matter. I recommend that they think about questions like, what would I want on my grave if I were to die right now? Who am I really? What are my values? What do I value in other people? Girls, by the way, are very interested in these questions. They aren't questions they get asked very often, and they like to think about these questions, and they enjoy these conversations.
I want to thank you very much.
Thank you. I really enjoyed this, Terry.
Mary Pfeiffer is the author of Reviving Ophelia, Saving the Selves of Adolescent Girls. This is Fresh Air.